Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter, again, at GoForItGant. We've got a jam-packed show for you today. Expected to be joined by football player, author, travel man, the great Dehani Jones, who will stop on by, Cincinnati Bengals, Dehani Jones, who will stop on by and talk about his new book, The Sportsman, which is in stores now, so make sure you pick that up. And he's going to talk about that, his career, and a bunch of other things. Dehani's a very interesting guy, has a lot of interesting thoughts, and we're going to get him here today. Also, expected to be joined by Fiona McCuag, one of the stars of Well Wars, which airs on Animal Planet, and as we continue to talk to some of the stars of Well Wars, and Fiona going to talk about that great show, which airs on Animal Planet. Interesting show, and Fiona will stop on by. Also, Brian Comfort, columnist for Slam Magazine, will stop on by to give us his thoughts on the NBA draft. Also, Brian writes for backsportspage.com as well. Brian knows basketball, and he was one of the guys that said back in April that Dirk Nowitzki was the true MVP. So this guy knows basketball, and Brian's going to stop on by and talk about that. And also expected to be joined by Philadelphia Eagles defensive tackle Jeff Owens. And Jeff had a bad injury, actually, against the Minnesota Vikings, patella tendon injury. We'll see how he's doing with that and how he's doing on the comeback trail. And Jeremy, how are you, sir?
Paulie, what's doing, man? I'm happy with the Philadelphia 76ers draft. What are you feeling? We got a Temple guy staying in town.
Temple guy in town, an active body in LaVoy Allen. Kind of raw, but active. We'll see what happens. I mean, some second rounders don't make the ball club. We'll see what happens with LaVoy Allen. But again, he is a Temple guy, and it's okay. And that's a great thing to be a Temple guy. And we got some owls in the building. And you know, we got some owls definitely here in the building. And Jeremy, speaking of the NBA draft, I mean, the NBA draft, a lot of people called it a weak draft, but it was actually one of the highest-rated drafts in the last few years. So that's a good thing for the NBA. But it was considered a weak draft. Kyrie Irving, guy who's only played 11 games in his college career, was drafted number one by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And it was a foreign invasion in the NBA draft. I mean, you have four players in the lottery, four international players going in the lottery, which is a record. A record, four players going in the lottery. So, I mean, it was an interesting draft, and you needed your pronunciation guide if you wanted to pronounce some of these names in this NBA draft. But, I mean, like I said, it was considered a weak draft by many, by a lot of people, actually. And you heard the talk, well, this is the draft that you want to get out of. This is the draft that you want to trade out of. If you want to trade out of a draft, this was the draft to do it. And any time you have any draft, you know, people can say, oh, this team was the winner and this team was the loser. But you know what? You're not going to know that until 3, 4, sometimes 5 years down the line, who was the true winner and who was the true loser. So, I mean, no one really knows. People can talk all they want to talk, but no one really knows. Truly, in a lot of ways, who's going to be good, who's going to be bad, and what have you. I mean, but again, it was a draft filled with foreigners, and the foreign invasion of basketball, which is a good thing, a great thing, actually, having the NBA. Basketball is a worldwide sport, and it's great to have foreigners and everybody else coming into the game. I think it's a great thing. I really do think it's a great thing. But, again, looking at this draft, in a lot of ways, you know, some of these – you don't get the sense that there was a franchise player in this draft. I mean, Kyrie Irving went number one, but a lot of people are not saying franchise player with Kyrie Irving. You know, not a lot of people aren't saying that. Derek Williams, number two, again, you're not saying franchise player with that guy. You're just not. I mean, so you got a lot of players out here where, you know, you're not saying, you know, these guys are you know, franchise players, even franchise changers at this point. But, you know, we'll see what happens as this thing goes on and on. But, I mean, you know, you saw, Enes Kanter, who went to number three with the Jazz. I mean, a lot of people are talking about he's going to be a solid player, but we'll see. And some people thought that the Cavs reached at number four with Tristan Thompson. I mean, and I was thinking kind of the same thing because they become a little redundant there. I mean, especially with J.J. Hickson in the mix and Varejao also there. I mean, so they needed size, and Tristan Thompson is a power forward. They didn't need power forward size. That's not what they needed, but, you know, they felt he was the player that they wanted and needed for their ball club, and they picked him. But, again, this is a draft. No franchise players in this draft. Definitely not any franchise players. But we'll see. Like I said, everybody can say this team was a winner, this team was a loser. But we'll see what happens. But the big story with the NBA, in my mind, is the possible lockout. And that's the big story. What was your thoughts on this draft, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, you said it. There's no real need to continue on. I thought it was super weak. I think if I was going to be anybody, especially the Cavaliers, I'd have packaged both of those, the one and the four, and I would have got out of this year. And I would have tanked it again next year. Or played, but this wasn't the draft for them. I mean, to have a one and a four and come away with those two players, as opposed to last time, you know, they were in this position with LeBron James, I think, you know, you want to kind of go back and say, is the franchise that close? And those players were, as you said, I mean, not many people were coming into this draft saying, you know, these players are that good. So I was somewhat surprised. That the Cavs, you know, especially with their number four pick, are these the moves that we're going to catapult them back to, you know, the NBA Finals, which is where they were? And I think no one out there is going to say, oh, yeah, in 2 years or in 3 years, you'll see this team with those two players back in the finals.
Yeah, and I would agree. That's funny. With Cleveland getting the number one pick. I mean, isn't it ironic, Cleveland, a franchise that's always had problems in the past, you know, a kind of a cursed franchise in a way. Isn't it ironic that they're the team that gets the number one pick this time around? And Cleveland always gets shafted. I mean, the Browns, LeBron James, the Indians, Jose Mesa. I mean, it's not always nice. It's not always fun to be a Cavaliers fan. It really isn't. It's really not nice and fun to be a Cleveland fan in general. But, I mean, like you said, the reality is we'll see what happens in the next few years with these guys, and we don't even know how good these guys truly will be. I mean, we can all say winner, this team's a winner, this team is a loser. But the reality of it all is that we won't know this thing possibly 2, 3, 4 years down the line, and everybody can say, oh, this team won, and this team lost, and this team did great, and this team didn't. But at the end of the day, the reality is we will not know. We'll never know until the next 2 to 3 years. And I think the big thing with the NBA right now is the possible lockout. And, you know, like I said, the draft, high ratings, the finals, nice ratings. A lot of momentum with the NBA right now, and now you have a possibility with a lockout. What a time for it. I mean, what a time for it. And like I said, we talked about this last week, and we'll say it again, and I'll say it again. I mean, The NFL, they can afford a lockout. If you're the NFL, you can afford to have a lockout. No problem. You can afford that. That's not a big deal for you. You know what I mean? Because people are definitely going to come back, and they'll come back to the NBA too as well. But they may, you know, it may take some time. It may take some time to build it up. But the NBA, the NFL, with their lockout, you know that the people are going to come back when it's all said and done. And there's some real issues with the NBA right now. There's some real issues. You know, you have owners who are losing money. That's legitimate. You do. It's legit. You have owners who are losing money. There's no getting around that. You have owners who are losing money in the NBA. You have a system in a lot of ways that needs to be fixed in the NBA. You have some things that need to be fixed and should be fixed during this CBA negotiation. But it's going to take time, and a lot of people are saying, I heard Rick Bucher from ESPN, I heard him saying that he believes that this is going to be a long one, and this could be another 50-game season like we saw back in 1999. A possible another 50-game season, and, you know, people being down on the NBA and people not talking about the NBA. And plus, you got to look at this. There's no Summer League this year either. Summer League is going, and that's usually a good time for us to kind of see some of these players and kind of get excited about the upcoming season. But there will not be any Summer League this year. And you know, that's stopping people from talking about the NBA, and that's not a good thing. And that's why I said last year it was such a good thing with the LeBron James thing and the whole decision thing. You may not agree with it. You may have hated it. But guess what? People were talking about the NBA, and it gave people something to talk about, and that, to me, is a great thing and a good thing. Let's bring in now Slam Magazine writer, Backpage Sports writer, the one, the only, Mr. Brian Comfort. Brian, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Paul. How are you, man?
Doing well. And Brian,
let's...
It sounds like it. But that's a good thing. That means you're busy and doing what you need to do.
That's right.
And Brian, let's get to the draft. I mean, this draft was chock full of names that you had to get the pronunciation guide out to pronounce. I mean, you had four foreigners going in a lottery. You had a guy who only played 11 games as a college player going as the number one pick. Many say it was a weak draft and a draft to trade out of. I mean, would you agree with that assessment? Was this a weak draft?
I think it's undeniable that it was a weak draft. Whether or not it was a draft to trade out of, that's one of the things that's easier said than done. You can't, I mean, there's not always a team to take what you have to give. I know we talked a little bit and you want to get to it a little later, but one team I think won as far as trading is Charlotte, rather. And, I mean, I think it's the first time in the Michael Jordan, Bobcats era that he's won a trade. And I think he downgraded very slightly from Steven Jackson to Corey Maggette, and then adding that ninth pick, which ended up being Kemba Walker. And, I mean, so it depends who you are and where you're at as a team. As far as Cleveland going one overall, I think they made the wrong choice. They have $20 million worth of point guards on their roster right now. And I think Derek Williams is the best player in the draft. He's today's four, and he's the perfect, combination as far as skill set goes for today's four. And
right.
This whole notion that you need a point guard to win an NBA championship is kind of far-fetched. We just watched Jason Kidd and J.J. Barea battle against Mario Chalmers, Mike Bibby, and Eddie House. So, I mean, you need great players to get to where you want to be in the NBA. You don't necessarily need any great player in one position. And, I mean, Kyrie Irving could be, you know, what some people said, he could be a rich man's J.J. Barea. I mean, he could be a one-time All-Star. He could be a two-time All-Star. You really don't know. When you only have 11 games out of him in college, and, you know, is he going to stay healthy? I don't know. I don't think Cleveland made the right pick at one overall. And honestly, I think even worse at their fourth pick. So for a team that really could have got a bright upside out of the draft, I don't think they did it right.
And that's what we were saying. I mean, talking about Cleveland, I mean, I thought Tristan Thompson, you become very redundant, especially with Hickson. And a lot of even with Irving, like you said, you become redundant with Sessions and Baron Davis in the fold. So, I mean, I guess ultimately they believe that he's going to – a lot of – there's been talk that he could be Chris Paul-like. You heard that. I mean, I don't know how true that is, but, you know, people are saying that.
I honestly think Cleveland did it backwards. I think they should have went with the big guy in Williams at one, and Brandon Knight would have been there at four. And then for my own personal like intrigue, I would have liked to see what it would have been like for another point guard to fall to David Kahn in Minnesota.
but Brian, let me ask you this. Do you think that there was any serious takers? It almost seemed like Cleveland was stuck in that no one wanted to. I mean, for a team that has two top four picks, you would almost think, if you didn't look at a draft class, wow, they're going to be much improved next year. And here you have I don't think anyone comes away from this draft saying they did. I mean, it wasn't a failure. They took two, players that were in the on the top of the boards. But it was almost as if they were stuck. Like, they kept looking around saying, well, what do you want us to do?
Yeah, there's that. And then, I heard rumors, and I don't know how serious talks were about Rudy Gay for the number four pick. I do that in a heartbeat. I do that without even thinking if I'm Cleveland. They have that huge trade exemption from Bron leaving. And then I remember Billis said when Tristan Thompson got drafted that he needs to learn how to play and how to score. And I'm sorry, I need more than that sentence for my fourth overall pick in the NBA draft.
You definitely would think you would get more out of the number four pick. And speaking of, everybody loved Jimmer Vredette out of BYU. everybody loved the guy, and he went to Sacramento. But he's going to be there playing with Tyreek Evans, DeMarcus Cousins. Is there enough balls to go around? And you got John Salmons, who likes the ball as well. Is there enough balls to go around in Sacramento?
They could be a team that goes, they can do a 26-56 to score 110 points a game. I think that they could be exciting to watch. I would have honestly liked to see Sacramento go with Kemba and put Kemba back there with Tyreek. They went, again, you said it, everybody's in love with Jimmer Fredette. Is he going to be able to defend in the NBA? How much are you going to be able to play him and Tyreek together? Tyreek's not really known as a great defensive basketball player. Do you want Jimmer handling the ball that much, or you want to keep it in Tyreek's hands as they've been doing since he was drafted? I don't know. I still think there's some question marks with that pick as well. But, as you outlined, this is really a weak draft, and I think teams are just kind of trying to take who they think is best available to them at their pick and not really looking at it as, we took Jimmer for that 10th overall, or we took, or not 10th, but, we took this guy here, we took this guy there, more looking at it as we added, decent pieces to our roster and, going from there.
We're talking to Brian Comfort, writer for Slam Magazine and BackSportsPage.com. And Brian, let's look at some of these trades now. You talked about the Bobcats and you thought they did well with their trade. I want to look at the Spurs and the Pacers trade where the Pacers gave up Kawhi
trade.
Leonard, who they drafted. And, I'm not a big fan of him, Leonard. But they got back George Hill, who I think is a good acquisition for these guys. Your thoughts on that trade?
Kawhi Leonard he's actually, I think he was a pretty good pick for where they got him at. A lot of people thought he could have went higher. And I think where Indiana got him at, and apparently San Antonio had their eyes on him for, much of the draft, and as he was falling was, on the phone, trying to make a trade for him. And whenever San Antonio makes a trade for somebody, I always look, I don't know. San Antonio must know something. They're
right.
Pretty much bat of a thousand other than Richard Jefferson. But, letting go of George Hill for all the Tony Parker rumors that were out, and I think George Hill is a perfect fit for Indiana. I think they need a two guard. They have Darren Collison at the one, with Paul George and Danny Granger, 3-4, however you want to put them. And then, they have Hansborough down there and Roy Hibbert. I think for what they needed, and George Hill I think is going to play more of a two guard, and he can – we've seen him score in Burt or in bunches. And I think the trade probably worked for both teams. And I only say that on San Antonio's part because whenever they do something like this, I just feel like they know what they're doing.
And that's a great point.
Well, let me ask you this, though, with San Antonio. I mean, if you're them and there's much speculation, where do they go, into next season? Do you see them just trying to continue on with this team, or
is it time to do a little bit more, you know, exploring other trade options now, and especially with the impending lockout, though?
I think for right now, I think they still think they can win with what they have. And really, I mean, who knows how far they could have went in the NBA playoffs last year if they didn't get that terrible 1-8 matchup with Memphis. And Memphis was just, I mean, we saw it in 07 with Golden State and Dallas. And, you know, Dallas didn't start shaking things up afterward, given Dallas the team wasn't, you know, quite as old. But I think San Antonio realized they had best record in the NBA last year and really could have went far, and they got stuck with a bad matchup when Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph were playing, you know, best basketball of their careers. And I think San Antonio maybe a play by ear type thing where they just kind of see how the season goes. And I still think that they are open to trade and, you know, move pieces around. But the bottom line is that Tim Duncan is going to be there for the rest of his career. And if Tim Duncan isn't going to be able to give you Tim Duncan numbers, you're, you know, that's a position that you're going to be in the decline. And there's a lot of good forwards in the NBA these days. So, I mean, it's what San Antonio thinks about their current roster, and if they think that they can move forward with what they have and they have a season like they did last year but without the same ending to it, then they'll probably stay with pretty much the roster they have right now.
And, Brian, what do you think about that three-team swap, Mavericks, Blazers, and Nuggets, and basically the Mavs get Rudy Fernandez, who I love for them. I mean, that's a great move for them. And then you have the Blazers and the Nuggets swapping point guards. And, you know, George Karl, he's a big fan of Andre Miller. And I remember George Karl saying he really didn't want to trade Andre Miller in the Iverson trade.
Yeah,
but, I mean,
I was going to say that.
What do you think about that deal?
I love it for Dallas. I love the acquisition of Rudy Fernandez for them, what they do. And they're, as we saw in the finals last year, they're a team that is a team in every sense of the word. They want players to do certain things on the court, no more, no less. And, you know, Dirk's their go-to guy. They have a veteran point guard. They added now a wingman. Caron Butler will be back. They made what I think is a great trade. As far as Portland, I'm not so sure I'd give up Andre Miller for Ray Felton, but I think Portland really lost in this deal. But I think, you know, like you just said, and you took the words right out of my mouth, George Karl loves Andre Miller. He didn't want him to go in the Iverson trade, which really Denver wasn't a better team after the trade. But it just looks so good on paper, you know, with Iverson technically still being in his prime, coming over with Carmelo Anthony. But, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. George Karl never wanted Andre Miller to go in the first place. Now he has his veteran point guard back. And I think it's good for all the young guys that acquired the Miller trade to add that veteran leadership.
And, Brian, at this point, the NBA lockout is looming. Bad news. I mean, it's a bad news considering how great the finals were, considering the ratings for the NBA draft. I mean, something needs to give here, but it doesn't look like a resolution is on its way, and they have a session next Wednesday, but the sticking point seems to be that hard cap, man. I mean, it's looking like there'll be a lockout, but do you think there'll be a lockout?
Man, the fan in me really wants to be naive and think that there won't be, but I think it's inevitable. I'd be hard-pressed to see basketball start up in, you know, around Halloween this year. There's just, you know, you said the hard cap. The thing is, the difference between the NFL and the NBA right now is generally the NFL is just arguing between money, whereas their system in place is pretty much as good as you're going to get in professional sports. The NBA, they really have to save owners from themselves. The NBA lost $300 million over the past, I forget how many years it is, last 2 years or something. It's all, if you just look at contracts, it's people like Jermaine O'Neal still making like $9 million. And, you know, like there's, it's just, it's a bunch of terrible contracts. But once these guys sign these contracts, they're, you know, they got them. They're guaranteed. So there's no getting out of it. So if you're a small market team who gives a guy like John Salmon a bunch of money, you know, you really don't have much to go with. So I think it is the hard cap, and I think they want to get rid of guaranteed contracts, at least, you know, maybe do an NFL style where, you know, a lot of the guaranteed money just given up front doesn't go against your cap. And another big thing is this amnesty clause they're talking about, whereas in the new CBA, a team will be able to get rid of. Say you have Gilbert Arenas is $60 million, you can wipe that right off your cap. You still have to pay him, but it doesn't go against your cap. And there's one player every team's going to be able to do that with. So there's a lot that really needs to be done in the NBA, and you know, really kind of saving the owners and general managers from themselves, and you know, really protecting the players too, because it's not really fair to to some players that, you know, maybe deserves the money that, say, Jermaine O'Neal or Gilbert Arenas are making and can't go anywhere to get it. And another thing is the long contract. I don't think we're ever going to see another NBA contract longer than 3 years, maybe 4 years, and unless you're re-signing your own star. And, I mean, it's just, again, the NBA needs these things done. They need to be fixed. The NFL, it just seems to be a big money argument. So I think the NBA really has some serious issues to tackle, and because of that, they will have a lockout. Yeah.
Brian, you brought up a very interesting point, which is the disparity between what came first, which is the NFL, which clearly, I mean, financially, there's no comparison between the two leagues. Yet the NBA now, which has to kind of live in the shadow, and you're right, they have huge financial reconciliations that have to be made. But, I mean, they sign players to these 7-year, $100 million deals, and in the second year, it's just on the books. And so, but how are these players going to feel about coming to the bargaining table when their counterparts in the NFL are now getting their union to make more and more concessions?
I think you got to have great leaders in your players' association, and you have guys that, you know, that's why you have a players' association. But, so you have the right guys sitting down at the table to make these negotiations for you. And I mean, some players aren't going to agree with a lot of what's going to happen. But as we've kind of learned, you know, in the, what was it, 98 lockout? Was it, or 99?
98, 99 season? 99, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, and kind of an unforgivable number of NBA players live paycheck to paycheck, and it's entourages, it's, you know, it's girlfriends on top of wives, it's, you know, it's all the travel,
baby mama,
spending money everywhere, yeah, exactly, and it's inconceivable, really. And then, you know, adding to that, how long the player is going to sit and not get paid. I think the players might actually hold a stand, whereas the NBA, they're really in no position to, because such an abnormal amount of them do live paycheck to paycheck, and not even just some of your lower tier guys. A lot of guys making, you know, $10 million a year do. So it's, I think when it comes down to it, the owners are definitely going to win and get what they want out of it, and players are really going to have no choice but to agree. And I think in the end, the owners are going to get together, and with David Stern, who's the best commissioner in sports, is going to put in something that doesn't that does work for everybody, and they're not exactly going to rip the players off per se.
Talking to Brian Comfort, writer for Slam Magazine, Backpage Sports. .com. And Brian, we're going to get you out on this one. And I've been thinking about this trade for a very long time. It's been in my thoughts. You got Dwight Howard, who says he wants to explore free agency in 2012. The formula that worked for the Miami Heat back in 2006 was Shaq and Wade. Would you, if you're the Heat and the Magic, think about a possible trade, Dwight Howard straight up, for LeBron James? And I don't really think it's as far-fetched as some may believe, but what do you think about that trade?
I honestly love it for both teams. I don't think for a second Dwight Howard staying in Orlando, and I think if they can acquire a LeBron James for him, they do it. And by the same token, I agree with what you just said, that Dwayne Wade and Dwight Howard together would be, I believe, a lot more effective and a lot more sort of a team than as opposed to, you know, once guys play one-on-one basketball than, you know, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade is. So I don't think it's that far-fetched either. And I think, I mean, Miami has said, Pat Riley said that he's not, you know, even listening to trades for any of the big three. I think if this one comes here, you know, comes on your lap, you got to look at it and really consider it. And honestly, if you know, Orlando told me today they were trading me Dwight Howard for LeBron James. I'd do it, given Dwight Howard is going to sign a contract extension with the trade. So I think, I would do it for RB. I would agree. With your assessment, you said, Ray, as I was coming on, that the decision, Leggett or not, helped the NBA. I think it without a doubt helped the NBA indirectly. But, and at the time, it seemed really bad for the league, maybe. But, you know, as the season went on, there wasn't, you know, I have a little brother who's 9, doesn't really, I mean, he watches sports, but it's hard to get him to sit and watch a whole game. He watched the Miami Heat just because them three guys together. And, I mean, I hate to say it as a Sixers fan, but the Heat are like his favorite team now. And, like, you know, but it's just proving the point that it's brought, you know, casual fans in to watch. And it's something that the NFL is great at, and it's kind of that's what's really spiked the ratings. Because people like you and me are going to watch the NBA next year no matter what. You know, not everybody else will, especially with a weak draft class coming in. So there's really not a whole lot to look forward to, you know, especially at the beginning of the year and, you know, pretty much up until playoff time. If you're not that emotionally invested in it, then you're not going to watch it.
Definitely. Everybody, make sure you check out Brian Comfort at Twitter. That's Brian Comfort, BryanConfer. Make sure you check him out. He's a writer for Slam Magazine. The man knows basketball. He's a writer for BackpageSports.com. And, again, the man knows basketball. And I got to say one more time, and I have to say it. This is the man who said Dirk Nowitzki was the true MVP back in April. And, by golly, when June came around, he was right. Brian, nothing but a pleasure, sir. Let's do it again.
Too, man. Thank you very much, man. It was fun.
Take care.
You too, man. All right.
Brian Comfort, Slam Magazine, BackpageSports.com. It was a pleasure talking to Brian. I mean, what do you think about that trade? I mean, is that trade far-fetched? I mean, LeBron James for Dwight Howard. Obviously, we haven't heard any talk of it. It's just, you know, me just sitting around and making soup and thinking about it. I mean, but what do you think? I mean, I just think the formula that got the Miami Heat the title back in 2006 was Shaq and Wade. And you can even look before then, you had Shaq and Kobe. The Dwight Howard, Dwayne Wade together would be that Shaq and Kobe, that Shaq and Wade type of situation. I mean, what do you think?
No, I mean, the bottom line in the reality of this juggernaut now that was supposed to be the Miami Heat is it also is going to always get back to these salaries. And ultimately, how are they going to be able to compete in the NBA, even if, you know, once they reconcile whatever happens with the labor agreements, but they don't have big men. I mean, that's clear. I mean, that's where they're losing out. I think the whole season, one of the things we saw, it was very clear in Chris Bosh, is that he's ultimately not going to be you're not going to see that guy grow into some, you know, monster four. He's a finesse player. He's got, you know, quick, explosive moves. So how are they going to go out and get a guy, a Dwight Howard type? And they won't. I mean, the answer is they're not going to, period. So,
I mean, the trade, I don't think the trade will happen. But, I mean, if you're Orlando and if you got approached by the Miami Heat and you have Dwight Howard, a guy who may not resign with your ball club, you have to do it. And it's been proven that if you put some players around LeBron James, I mean, you can get very far. So if a team was coming your way, meaning the Orlando Magic was coming your way and saying, you know, or the Miami Heat, whoever, or they'd come together, if one of these two teams was talking to each other, I would think the deal would have to – if you're Orlando, you definitely have to do it. If you're Miami, you have to think about it. Because, I mean, some people don't think that Wade and LeBron can truly play together effectively because both of them are affected with the ball in their hands. So,
that's my big – I mean, that's been my argument all along, that it's unfortunate, but I think down line and as long as they stay together, you're going to have two like-minded superstars. They're the same superstar in terms of how they take games over. I mean, LeBron is not going to maybe I don't see him growing into a more post-up, you know, player. He has that the same ability that Wade has, except the difference in them is about 3 or 4 inches and a couple of years. So I think it's great that they're best friends and they want to play together, but, I mean, the difference between Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan was always there throughout their careers. I mean, yeah, were they extremely complimentary players? They very much were, but Pippen was, I mean, he was much more tied to being closer to the basket than Jordan. And you have two perimeter, basically perimeter players who need the ball in their hands. Sure, can they pop and shoot? I mean, but so could Pippen. But Pippen was a guy who could dominate teams on the board. And I think to go and think around or to process, you know, where they're going to be able, meaning the Miami Heat, to build that player in. I say it's not Chris Bosh, period.
Well, I mean, if you were, again, this is all, our imagination at this point, but if you were to bring a Dwight Howard in for LeBron James, Chris Bosh is a guy who can hit the spot-up jumper and can face up, is a face-up four. He can do that. And so you have Dwight Howard there. You have defense there. You take care of your size problem. You solve a lot of issues there with Dwight Howard in the fold. You solve a lot of issues there if you can bring in a guy like Dwight Howard. Now, again, I don't think it will happen, but I think it's something that, especially if you're Orlando, you might want to think about exploring, because Dwight Howard will not be signing with you, not right away at least, and he's going to explore free agency in 2012, and then you got to look at it from this perspective as well. If you're a player and you're a free agent and the Orlando Magic come calling your way, you may say, I don't know if I want to go there because I don't know if Dwight Howard's going to be there. And I don't want to go to a situation where I'm playing with a bunch of scrubs because Dwight Howard has left the ball club.
Right.
I mean, so it's a tough situation. It was the same situation with LeBron James in a lot of ways. I mean, people did not know what he was going to do. And so, you know, you had players coming out saying, you know, there's a possibility. You had players coming out saying that, you know, I'm not going to sign with Cleveland because I don't know what's going to happen with LeBron James. And we all know what happened with the Cavaliers once LeBron James left. So in my mind and in my opinion, it's a tough situation for the Magic. If I'm Orlando, I'm only trading Dwight Howard if I can get a superstar back or maybe even an Andrew Bynum or something of that nature. But the thing is, I'm not giving up Dwight Howard during this season. I think I'm going to let this thing go out, ride out, and see what happens. But it's something they definitely have to think about in Orlando.
The problem with Orlando is going to ultimately be, and I mean this, like, they're going to have to that team they have, they're going to have to. They did a lot of trades, and they're going to have to rework it, because I think it's very clear that while it's an extremely talented team, they too didn't mesh well. And so what you have there is, again, it's another project. And ultimately it's really going to come down to, does Dwight Howard want to sit around for another season? Because this was not the right team. This was the wrong move for them to go out. It was pretty obvious, even though, unfortunately, I thought they could have had the talent. I think when they walked into the playoffs, it was very quick to see that team was not meant to be, period. So where do they go when they make all those trades and they're now going to be faced with a labor agreement? Who knows what's going to come out of it? I think if you were a player who, a guy like Dwight Howard, what you're realizing is, unlike the Mavericks, who every year they were focused on the same goal, I don't see the organization that he's with right now they don't have the same mindset to me. So how is that going to, impact him?
And, it's just like the trade that they made. I thought that, be a good situation for Orlando when they did the trade. I remember I had Stephen A. Smith on. I told him I thought it was going to be a good trade and things would work out. But it just did not come together. It just did not come together for whatever reason, you know, but it didn't come together. And, you know, Dwight Howard, you know, he wants the team to be better. He wants the team to be better. And, you know, in order for that to happen, I would think the franchise would need some kind of clarity with Dwight Howard. And without getting that clarity, you're in a situation now like Cleveland was a few years back, a couple years back with LeBron James. You're in that same situation. It's similar in that respect, but different in that I think Cleveland had a very legitimate shot to win the NBA title with Orlando coming into next year.
But I think a guy, you can see, I mean, to me, it's also there is some, I think, philosophy issues inside that organization. No one really seems to be on the same page. I said it before the playoffs. I felt like they were going to go far because at some point they really have to realize that, the offense has to run through him. And there are points, though, and I will say this, I mean, against Dwight Howard, there are points where he doesn't seem to want that for the team, and it's like it's almost as if when you saw LeBron passing the ball away at the end of in the middle of fourth quarter, you have to. I mean, if you're Dwight Howard, you have to embrace that, and he doesn't always do it. Number one, and then when he does want the ball, it's almost like they go into games fighting him, not giving him the ball. And so it's a very, to me, it's been that way for two or three years. It's an organization that, to me, is just there's a lot of, it does seem like animosity. The coach and the players never really seem to be on the same page. But they seem to be, unfortunately, it's a very talented coach. And with Dwight Howard, do you really want to give up that kind of a player? I mean, especially when Orlando, let's not forget, Paul, Orlando couldn't make it work with Shaquille O'Neal, and now they're not going to be able to make it work with the next Shaquille O'Neal, Shaq Jr. So ultimately, that, to me, will put a big black eye on that franchise from a talent perspective. Who would want to go there knowing this is a team that they can't make it? If you're a talented player, they're not going to – you're not as important as the coach or the organization or the GM or whomever.
And you know, you say Shaq Jr. I mean, who is the real Superman between those two? But you know, it's going to be a bad situation. And you know, you're seeing this now more in the NBA, where you have the trend of guys coming together, forming super teams, which may be difficult with the new CBA. And you also have guys coming together and going to larger markets. You know, so, I mean, and Orlando is not a big, big market. And Shaq, he went to L.A., and maybe Dwight Howard wants the same thing. Maybe he's thinking the same thing. I'm not saying L.A., but I'm not. Maybe a super team, or maybe he's thinking, you know, I'm going to go to a big city. Bright lights the big city, you know, New York City. And we'll see what happens, but I just think, you know, this may sound crazy on my part, but, you know, that trade may sound crazy, but, I mean, if you're Orlando, you're dealing with a situation with Dwight Howard where he may not be back, and then you're out of luck. You're out of luck. So you're running into that situation. And so if you get a good offer, like a LeBron James, not saying that it would be offered, but maybe you offer Dwight Howard for LeBron James. Maybe you start the dialogue with the Miami Heat.
Paul, let's say this. Bottom line is, I mean, I think that's in your head, and that's great. I mean, Paul Gann is filled with many ideas, and I mean, you could follow him on Twitter. But I think the reality is that Dwight Howard, he continues year in and year out to be, I think, embarrassed in front of, let's call it, his constituents in the offseason, his colleagues. I will say that's why I compare a Dirk Nowitzki versus a Dwight Howard. There's a guy with an owner who, when they win, I mean, the owner pretty much says, and it was very well known, that he made Dirk his guy. And year in and year out, Cuban was obsessed with winning and getting back. I don't see that in this organization, and I think unfortunately, Dwight Howard is not just seeing that. He's tired, too, of the minutiae and the BS that comes with this organization.
Well, I don't want to say it's BS with this organization. I think it just comes down. Orlando, to me, is a sound and a pretty good organization. I think the problem becomes is that they're not putting the talent around them, the talent that he believes is necessary to win. I mean, they went to the finals back in 2008, and they had talent around them then, and they decided, you know what, we needed to retool. They retooled, and it didn't work. They went out in the first round to the Atlanta Hawks, a team that I thought they were a better team than, quite frankly, but for whatever reason, it just did not come together and has not come together for the Orlando Magic, and it's going to be interesting what happens, you know, with Dwight Howard. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Dwight Howard. I mean, I'm all for these guys staying with their teams. I was in favor of LeBron James staying in Cleveland. I want these guys to stay with the home team, the team that they came in the league with. That's what I want. But, again, it's not what I want. And, you know, they don't live for me, and they don't live for you, and they don't live for anybody else. They got to live for themselves and do what's right for themselves and their family. But I'm hoping Dwight stays in Orlando, and I'm hoping, you know, they can build a team around the guy and make some things happen. But, again, we'll see what happens, and we'll see how the whole situation transpires. But the way I see it, LeBron James for Dwight Howard may not be a bad option. May not be a bad option for both teams. For both teams. May not be a bad, bad option. Expected to be joined by Dehani Jones, waiting for him to call on in. And, you know, he has a book out, The Sportsman. And it should be very interesting to hear about that book. I mean, the guy is a well-traveled, well-versed individual. And he's been around the world and back again. And so it should be interesting to hear his take on this lockout and on some of the things that he's doing outside of football. And he's taking advantage of this time outside of football and doing some things. And that's always a good, good thing and an important thing to do. We're actually now being joined by Cincinnati Bengals linebacker, Mr. Dehani Jones. Dehani, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Dehani, you're a guy, you have a different style in terms of fashion. I call it different, but I also call it very effective. Where did this come from?
Where the bow ties came from, or just dressing in all black, or, you know, there's a lot of different things. But I mean, I'll focus on the,
Let's start with the bow ties.
The bow tie came, you know, as a challenge from one of my friends, Coach Littlejohn, who said, you know, Don, if you want to be anybody, you got to really rock the bow tie. And I didn't really believe him too much. And then, unfortunately, I found out he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I started wearing the bow tie to support him. He got better. I never took the bow tie off, and now we've worked with over, you know, 30 organizations in their cause. So that's where the bow tie cause came from, and we still continue to work with amazing organizations to this day.
Did it take time for you to get used to the bow tie?
No, it doesn't take time to get used to the bow tie. You just put it on and go. It's amazing how the world changes, if you will, once you start wearing the bow tie. I mean, it's an essence of, you know, the reestablishment of the gentleman. It's how you represent yourself. It's what you say. It's what you say before you speak, if you will. And then once you speak, how what you say reflects that.
And Dehani, you know, my wife says to me all the time, I got a big head and that I don't look good wearing ties. Well, the bow tie shrink my head. It will shrink my head a little bit.
Yeah, it will change your life. I think if you go to the bow tie, it'll completely change your life, change your perspective, and you know your wife might even like that. So I'd advise you to challenge yourself to rock the bow tie.
And I'm going to take that into serious consideration. And considering you're the guy who you are, I got to take that into some serious consideration. But Dehani, you're a guy, man. I mean, no one travels like you, and mainly because of your show on the Travel Channel. I mean, you traveled everywhere, Africa, Australia, everywhere. You name it, you've been to it. What has traveling the globe done for your perspective on life?
I think it's changed it. I mean, I think it's allowed me to see firsthand who these people, who are people, and where are they, and what do they look like? And they all look you know, they all look different, but at the same time, within their heart or the depths of who they are, everybody, people are people. And that's what's the amazing thing. When you travel, you come to learn that. You come to grips with the differences, yes, but inherently and innately, we are all of people. So, you know, in the Sportsman, I talk about that through the different travels, through the different countries, through the different people I've met, and I encourage people to travel.
And you've been everywhere, so you can tell us about many different places. And Dahani, I was reading your book, The Sportsman, and I read, and I didn't know this about you, but after you were cut by the New Orleans Saints, you were ready to give up football. I mean, talk about your mindset at that time.
Well, I mean, you know, that was the first time I'd ever been cut. It was the first time I'd ever been released by a team. And, you know, it was an interesting place to be because you don't know exactly how to function with that space because you've never been there. And, you know, a couple of different places I went to didn't necessarily work out. So I was starting to evaluate what I would do if football didn't exist, which a lot of guys are doing right now. And, you know, fortunately enough, I ended up in Cincinnati, which I've been here for the last 4 years, and I've really enjoyed my experience since I've been here. But, you know, the game almost finished for me at that time.
And that had to be a very tough time for you. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I was going to say you brought up I think an interesting point. The concept of the Saints and you being cut and having to grapple with maybe being out of football, I assume it's given you a much better perspective during this lockout, and you've probably been able to adjust and adapt. I would assume much easier because you also have much more going on in your career.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's definitely things I have going on in my career, and I want to encourage other guys. Right now in football, and this is part of the thing that I want to do, especially with my company, VMG Creative, is help guys really find their passions outside the game of football, because we all know that the lockout will occur for everybody at a certain time, and there will be no more football for you. Now, football will go on because football is bigger than all of us, but at the same time, there's some things that we need to learn to find that are our passions, that are our loves, that are our dreams, and for me, part of my you know, passion and dream is the game is travel and meeting people, and that's why I continue to do so, and that's why I think it helps me in the game of football.
Well,
we're talking to Dahani Jones.
Do you see the league? I want to jump in there because we speak to Willie Rofe. He's a regular on the show and a really great guy and very outspoken. Do you see the league, the Players Association, I'm sorry, doing a very good job of what you just said, which is explain to these players that this lockout that we're seeing now ultimately always happens to every player, and that you this game that you play, and yes, it's your profession, yes, it's your career, but it's not a normal career. Most people work 30 years, 20 years. Here, if you work 10 years or 15 years, you're arguably a Hall of Famer. I mean, do you see the Players Association, is it transforming now because of this lockout?
I think the Players Association does a fair amount, and they do as much as they possibly can, but I think the onus really falls upon the player himself or taking it into his own hands, what he wants to do, what he wants to love, what he wants to focus on outside the game. And veterans such as myself, and being able to verbalize that of which I'm passionate about and not being afraid to talk about that. You know, you talk about guys, you know, people working for a long amount of time. Some guys, you forget, I've been playing the game since they were 8. Now they're 28 or they're 25, right? That's a long time to be working at a job, which is football, which has become primary within your DNA. So it's a little bit different. And, yes, the game of football only lasts for so long. And I want to encourage guys to just really think about things that they're passionate and off the field. And, you know, the Players Association is doing a fair job. And as a player who does things off the field, I have to do an even better job so that I can hopefully influence and help other guys find their passions.
We're talking to Dahani Jones, linebacker for the Cincinnati Bengals and author as well. And Dahani, we're talking about this lockout. It is day 102 of this lockout. It may be a resolution shortly. But from a player's perspective, we talked about this. But do you think players have prepared themselves financially for this lockout?
I think there are a lot of players that prepared themselves financially for the lockout. I think a lot of people knew that the lockout would occur, so they prepared as well. But, you know, it's not going to be everybody. you'd like to think that everybody prepared as best they possibly can, and that's just not the case. But you'd hope that the majority of people have done enough, that they have been surrounded, they surround themselves by enough people that will help them make the best decisions. So, you know, as we see moving forward into lockout, look, football will come back. People, Americans, we love football. Football is America's sport, and it'll get back to where it needs to be, and everybody will get back on track.
And Dehani, let's go back to the field now. And looking at this Bengals team coming into the season, I had you guys going to the Super Bowl. I was wrong. But what happened there? I mean, why didn't things come together for this ball club?
We didn't win. You know, we didn't do what we were supposed to do. And unfortunately, we didn't get to where we wanted to go. And whether you want to contribute that to not making enough plays, not converting enough touchdowns. I mean, you can go across the board. You can run the gamut on, you know, thoughts and ideas. But the fact is, we just didn't make it. And, you know, that's the great thing about the game of football. Every year is a different year, and every year provides a different opportunity.
Dehani, are you or anyone, certainly in Cincinnati, is anyone in contact with Carson Palmer and that situation?
Yeah, Carson's out in California. I haven't talked to him. I've talked to him a couple of times, but he's out in California. He's just plugging away. And, you know, his brother has referred to him as his former teammate, you know, and the guys on the team have said, you know, we wish him well. And so he's not going to be back. You know, Carson's in a good place. He's done a lot of good things, and he's taking good care of himself. And he's allowed to make a decision for himself.
And is this team ready, you know, to move forward without Carson?
I think this team is ready to move forward without Carson. They're going to have to make a couple different decisions on who they want to play at what position. And, you know, I'm sure Coach Lewis will do that. I mean, they have Dalton and they have Jordan Palmer. I'm not sure that they're the exact answers. But at the same time, you can say this, that they will work hard enough in order to get to the place where they need to be in order to be successful. And whether that's, you know, Jordan or whether that's Dalton, you know, they will do a good job and they will work with the coaches in order to bring their game to the level of play which we need to have them play in order to win. Because they're young guys, and they have come from good stock and good experience, and they will be able to play in the league as they shall.
And Dehani, you are a free agent, and a lot of talk is the Bengals will go in a different direction. But when it's all said and done, do you see yourself back in Cincinnati?
I see myself back in Cincinnati, but who knows what will happen. The
right.
World is an interesting place, and you never know exactly where you might end up. And,
exactly.
You know, I talk about that. That's part of my philosophy that you read about in The Sportsman in terms of, you know, there's these windows of opportunity in life, and you have to be able to jump through them, sometimes blindfold, because they're all around you, but you're going to have to eventually choose. And one thing I've chosen is to travel. One thing I've chosen is football. One thing I've chosen is bow ties. And there's a lot of other things, but at the same time, I'm just focused on helping others. That's part of the reason why I wrote The Sportsman, because I want other people to see the other aspects of the world, which are so beautiful, and to get out and travel.
And talk about the process of writing a book.
It takes some time. You know, working with a great author, Jonathan Grote, seeing myself collaborating in order to make The Sportsman, Unexpected Lessons from Around the World, Sports Odyssey. And, you know, we just worked together, collaborated. Part of the four corners of the Bowtie Cause is self-representation, service, collaboration, critical thought, and collaboration being one of the key. You know, you can't do everything by yourself, and you have to know what you're good at. You have to know what other people are good at. And so John and Grotstein kind of came into my life, and we functioned well together and collectively put together The Sportsman, and it's been a success.
Dehani, has it been difficult for you, Dehani Jones, the NFL player, to kind of break the mold of always being attached to that moniker and saying, hey, you know what, besides that, I can be an intelligent person, well-rounded, travel and write and do other things and not just be locked into, oh, I'm doing it because I'm an NFL player?
You know, I know what I'm passionate about. I know what, you know, when I first came to the league, I thought this. You know, utilize the game as a springboard in order to do and move and do other things. And the game has provided me incredible opportunities. Use it as a springboard to change the negative stereotypes that are placed upon athletes that were just athletes. And I continually will work on that. That's my part of my goal of player development. And as I continue throughout the league, and I've been in for the last 11 years, I've seen guys change. I've seen the league change, and I'm encouraged by it.
And Dahani, recently you made some comments about Brian Urlacher and saying that he is not a top 10 linebacker. He came back and he responded and saying that you are known for more of your off the field stuff. How do you respond to that?
I appreciate him acknowledging that. And I will send him a Ronald McDonald bow tie because that's one of the organizations that we work with.
I think that it's very interesting. I think this dynamic. I wondered when he said that to me. It kind of gets back to your point of again the final lockout that an athlete goes through, which is their retirement. And saying that to me, it proves your point. That I mean, hey, listen, you've been an NFL player now for quite some years. I mean, there should be no argument of the fact that you can play NFL caliber professional football. So when he says that to you, I mean, do you look at that and wonder, it's a shame for guys to think that it's a bad thing to step out and wear a bow tie and write a book and travel and be successful outside of one thing.
No, I will always respect someone for their opinion and what they think. I am looking for the betterment of the community. I'm looking for the betterment of players so that they can really express the things that they're passionate about outside the game of football. And so when they leave the game, they can move on these great things that they are so focused on, that they so love to do. I think there was a quote, someone saying, in 10 years or 15 years, and you look back on something that you've done and you can't say anything about football, what will you have said you've done? And I challenge that to athletes. I challenge that not only to football players, basketball, baseball players, and the likes of different people that are playing different sports. Football doesn't define you. It's a part of what you do, but it's not all of who you are. It's definitely a part of it, but at the same time, there's a lot of other facets of you as a person that have come into this equation. And for me, it's travel, it's bow ties, it's creative. It's the game of football. There's a lot of different aspects. It's the 20 different countries I've been to through Dahani Tackles Globe that I wrote about in the Sportsman. It's over 65 countries that I've traveled to and all these different people I've met. In the bow tie calls, we talk about the blank canvas, and my blank canvas is full of different colors. As people have come into my life, they've added different color, and football is a part of that color. So, he's of his opinion, and I can appreciate that. And like I said before, he will get a Ronald McDonald bow tie because I know he does a lot of good work for them. Urlacher is a great philanthropist.
And Dahani, I want to go back to Cincy for a minute now. And you played with T.O. back in Philly. You played with him in Cincinnati. How different was T.O. in Philly in comparison to T.O. in Cincinnati? Is he changed?
No, T.O., T.O. is T.O. Chad is Chad. There's a lot of guys that won't change, but at the same time, when they come on Sunday, they come prepared to play.
Right. And that's all. T.O. definitely comes prepared to play, and he's always in shape. I've always been a proponent of T.O. I mean, he is what he is, but he's talented as I don't know what.
Absolutely.
And Dahani, on this show, we got a game that we call Who's Better. We'll give you two topics. You tell me which one is better. You ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready.
Better football town, New York or Philadelphia?
Ooh, New York.
Really?
New York. New York raised me. I can't ever say anything about the team that the city that raised me. They took me in, they brought me in, and then Philly molded me, so I'm gonna give it to New York.
Oh man, better place to visit, Africa or Australia?
Better place to visit. Which country within Africa? I mean, Africa's a big place, but I'll take Africa.
Okay, let's say the Senegal.
I love Senegal. I mean, Senegal over Australia, of course. I felt like I was going home when I went to Senegal.
Better looking, Halle Berry or Lauren London?
Or Lauren London?
Yes.
I'd say Halle Berry,
Okay. You can't really argue with that.
She's classic.
Better linebacker, Brian Urlacher or Dahani Jones?
I'm definitely going to go with myself, Dahani Jones. It's not anything selfish. You got to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, who can believe in?
better sense of fashion, Chad Ochocinco or Dahani Jones?
You know, Chad's got good fashion sense. You know, he does always bring his A game. If he would just add a bow tie, I would put him ahead of me. So, you know, Chad with a bow tie, he would beat me. But since he doesn't always wear bow ties, I'm going to have to edge him out. But, you know, he's my good friend.
I get the sense that the bow tie is kind of that missing link, kind of that cherry on top of the sundae.
Well, like I said, Coach Little John told me, if you want to be anybody, you got to rock the bow tie. And Chad,
wow,
he does rock the bow tie sometimes, so I have to give him credit. And I've worked with the TO with bow ties. He's worked with the Alzheimer's Foundation. He, he's doing a great job within the community. And, you know, one of the bow ties we made was alongside with TO, and you know, I can't say enough about him.
Lastly, better author, Dr. Seuss or Dahani Jones?
Dr. Seuss. You know, he's been around a long time. He's told a lot of stories to a lot of young kids. I have to definitely give it to Dr. Seuss. But I'd invite everybody to check out The Sportsman as well and follow me at Twitter at Dahani Jones.
And Dahani, where can people find this book?
You can find the book anywhere. You can download it. You can buy it. You can purchase it. You can go search for it. It's everywhere. You can go to DahaniJones.tv and find it. You can go to BowtieCause.org, and you can get it there. It's available anywhere. And I invite, like I said before, people to follow me at Dahani Jones on Twitter, you know, as I continue conversations about different things and different parts of life that I'm passionate about.
And Dahani, you're a very interesting guy, and it was nothing but a pleasure to talk to you, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with football. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with this book, The Sportsman. Make sure you get it. It's in bookstores now. Grab a copy. Make sure you get it. And we wish you nothing but the best of luck in all that you do. Appreciate you stopping by, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Dahani Jones, linebacker, Cincinnati Bengals. Dahani Jones, author. Dahani Jones, he does it all. And he's a guy who does it all. I mean, he's an interesting guy. He kind of took the high road with Brian Urlacher. I was hoping he would say something a little nice, but he took the high road there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was interesting, the lockout and getting a hold of each of these players, Paul. It certainly you build a little bit of a library here, and seeing. You know, how this is impacting Dahani, it's interesting because, as he explained, he was prepared for this 4 years ago, and it doesn't really seem to be impacting, him that much. And you're also seeing the creativity of some of these players, how they're able to go out and parlay, if you will, their success. But he also brought up something that was interesting in that, you know, how young, and we do forget, you know, that most of these professional athletes, they start playing this game, you know, 6 to 10-ish, if you will. And then, certainly at 10, 12, it goes from, you know, 10, 12 years old is when they get very serious about it, all the way up until the culmination of the draft and then their career. And while people may think, oh, it's ridiculous they get these million-dollar salaries, even a great player only has an 8-year career, and so they have to take that money and be able to become successful with that starting at 12. Most of us, you know, if you're a lawyer or a doctor, you really don't start working until you're in your mid-30s. It's very interesting to see, you know, hearing these players and watching how it's impacted their life. And as I say, you compare a surgeon who finishes, their final residency in surgery, and they're in their mid-30s, where some NFL players are drafted at 19, 20, and 21, but they were playing football at a very high level, you know, at 12 or 14. And the same could be said for any athlete, for that matter. But they're done at 30, 35, you know, 40 is the Brett Favre, one in 100 years.
Right, and you know, Brett Favre is Brett Favre. I mean, he's a special kind of guy. So, I mean, it's really kind of no comparison in a lot of ways. I mean, Brett Favre is a guy that, you know, in a lot of ways, he's the exception. He's not the rule. He's definitely the exception in this whole thing with you know, NFL players and playing a long time. But, I mean, you make up a great point. You make a very great point. And the reality is, like you said, lawyers, doctors, teachers, whoever else, you worked at your job 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years. NFL player, you're lucky if you get 5 years out of it. You're lucky if you really get 1 year out of it, to be honest with you. But if you look at that whole situation, you're lucky to get that time. And when you're 30, 35, 34 years old, in the prime of your life, you're old in football. You're old in basketball. You're old in baseball. You're old in sports in general. And at that point, when you're old, you got to make decisions. And you're used to playing football every day of your life. Training for football every day of your life, dealing with football every day of your life. But the reality is, at some point, football goes away. And when it goes away, you're going to need something to hold on to. And so what Dahani Jones is doing is great. I mean, he has a lot of business interests, And that's a good thing. And that's a great thing, actually. I mean, so you wish him nothing but the best of luck. But he's smart. He's preparing himself for post football because this thing don't last forever. And so you got to prepare yourself. And he's doing that. And guys need to look at Dahani Jones, like he said, and you know, and think about some of the things that he's doing, because he's doing some big things and some good things, not only in the community, but he's taking care of himself outside of football. And like we said, football does not last forever, and that's very important for all of us to know. And even switching gears now, even managing in baseball, that doesn't last forever. And we a strange situation this week out of Washington. Their manager, Jim Riggleman, quit after the team's game, after a walk-off victory, no less. I mean, the Nationals had won 11 of the last 12 games. 11 of the last 12 games under Riggleman, and he quit. He said that, you know, I went to the GM, and I asked him, you know, about my contract option. He has an option for next year, and he wanted that option picked up. Well, they talked, him and the general manager, and a decision was made from – well, the general manager would not talk to him about it. Mike Rizzo, he would not talk to him about it. And so Jim Riggleman made the decision to say, you know what? Peace. I'm walking out of this thing. I'm done. I'm leaving. And he did it. He walked out. He left. He was done. He left. He quit. He quit. He just quit. I mean, right after the game, he quit. As crazy as that sounds, as crazy as that is, he quit. Right after the game, he quit. And now, Washington Nationals, different direction. They have named Davey Johnson their new manager. And Davey Johnson has agreed to a contract through 2012 with a club option in 2013. So Davey Johnson was given that assurance that Jim Riggleman was not. And so, I mean, if you're Jim Riggleman, I don't know why you walk away at this point. I mean, your team has just won 11 of the last 12 games. You're a game over 500 in Washington, no less. The Washington Nationals, no less. So if you continue to have, you know, if your team continues to play well or play decently, guess what? You'll be fine. You'll be fine maybe if Washington doesn't want you, another ball club does. But by quitting But by quitting now, you don't know what happens. By quitting now, you don't know what happens. Teams may shy away from you.
Yeah, well, but my point is, first of all, I mean, if you heard what he said he made it very clear. He felt as though he can and would be able to get another job outside of, you know, baseball. He feels like
I thought he said he wasn't sure at this point. He's not sure whether or not he would be able to after this.
No, he said he feels, Paul, I mean, if you watched the that press conference, I mean, it's very clear he comes out and says that he felt as though, you know, Jim Ringelmann, he can manage, and he doesn't, and he will not. When he felt as though he was mistreated, and he went on to say that he feels as though his body of work as a manager will not be defined there, and he can manage. And I think if anything, and you saw that, it was, here's a guy who was clearly upset, and it's very obvious. They did not, meaning the Nationals, they were really not committable to him. Whether he won 11 in a row, Paul, he felt as though he shouldn't have to prove that.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying, but at the same time, if you continue to do well, if your team continues to do well, your team continues to play good baseball, you're okay. You're okay, and guess what? If you're not rewarded by the Washington Nationals, some other team may reward you. Some other team may reward you. If the Nationals are not going to reward you, somebody else may. So I think you deal with the situation. I think a lot of ways you man up and deal with the situation. I mean, that's what men do. I mean, you do things sometimes when you don't like. You do things sometimes when it's not comfortable. You do things where you just feel like you're being disrespected at times. But guess what? Guess what? If Jim Ringelmann and the Washington Nationals continue to play the way they're playing, they're a game over 500. If the Nationals end the season maybe a game or two over, or two, three, four, five games below 500, you've done a good job in Washington, and you should be commended. And, you know, you got Bryce Harper out there in the minors. He could be coming up soon. You got Steven Strasburg, and we'll see what happens with him. And he's coming off Tommy John surgery. He could be back next season. You have pieces in place. But for whatever reason, Jim Ringelmann decided to walk away, and I don't think it was a good decision.
In terms of wanting to be a manager again in Major League Baseball, it's certainly going to be difficult to do that when you just walk off the field because you didn't get an extension. I mean, it's showing a lot of people, if you will, Paul, what that basically. If people don't do what Jim Ringelmann wants, then he's going to quit. So I will say I don't think he necessarily thought it through, because I don't see who now wants to take him back or take him on under that. It was comical. It was like a complete meltdown in front of the national media.
Well, to me, it was a childish decision. I mean, that's what children do. I mean, okay, I'm working at this job, and they're not doing some of the things I want them to do, and they're not guaranteeing me this and guaranteeing me that. I'm leaving. I quit. At the end of the day, I quit. I mean, it's like quitting a job without giving 2 weeks' notice. It's just, I guess he has his reasons, and he actually was on a radio show yesterday, ESPN 100 in Chicago. He said, I never considered myself a quitter. I think if I had stayed on, it would have been festering with me, and I would not have been able to manage the nine innings. The distraction before and after the game with my attitude about it and not being able to have the same energy and upbeat attitude it takes to run a ball club before and after the game, that would have been a distraction to the ball club. It was already becoming a distraction, and I was getting irritated about it. Those were the words of Jim Ringelmann, and, well, Jim, $600,000 a year. You need to deal with it, son. $600,000 a year.
Well, Paul, you always
make it work.
You're always making it about the money. I mean, it's like money is somehow it's got a spell over you. It's more than just the money, Paul. I think when you look at what he says, it's comical because when he talks now, Jim Ringelmann, he sounds like you, where it's all about the money. The fact that, like, you can't, as a professional, do your job. A, they're paying you for the contract you signed with them, and the fact that you want more from them, you should, as a professional, be able to shut that down and not worry about next year today. You worry about next year when the season's over. And the fact that you can't do that, that's why I say, I mean, it clearly is going to show an entire league now what Paul Gant and Jim Ringelmann are about. I mean, which is the almighty dollar.
Well, I said Jim Ringelmann should not have walked away. I thought he should have dealt with the situation.
You, And your comment, of
but
course,
he is making
over.
Money. He's making $600,000. It's not really all about the money. It's about happiness,
about
and I guess we're going to want happiness
unless he's getting paid. I mean, to me, and I'll say this, that's what I say. It was penny wise, dollar foolish, because it's very clear that Jim Riggleman he pretty much makes it clear to the world. Jim Riggleman isn't happy unless Jim Riggleman's getting paid.
Well, I mean, the thing was, this wasn't about money. It was about happiness. And he would not have been happy dealing with this situation and believing that he was not the guy. But, you know, you would think the team has won 11 of the last 12 ball games. They're on a high. You just came off a walk-off victory. You would think that you would try to make it work on some level. I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, to me, there has to be more to the story. It has to be more. I mean, it's like, you know, you're quitting. It's like you have a job and you quit without giving 2 weeks' notice, yeah, right after your shift. Oh, I'm not coming back. You guys are not, you know, doing what I want you to do and blah, 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 blah. The job is not firing you anytime soon, but you feel like, you know what, I can't work under these type of conditions. To me, you know, that's not smart, you know, especially if you want a reference from these people years later. It's just not smart. It's just not a good thing to do if you're Jim Riggleman. But he has his reasons. He felt like it would be a distraction. He felt like he could not do that and deal with those distractions. So he decided to make a decision. To me, a decision that, you know, to me was not a smart decision, a decision that was a dumb decision, a decision, in my opinion, was kind of a childish decision.
Absolutely. I mean, positively. I think it makes you wonder why. Also, I mean, he should have known from the beginning of the season that they were not looking to give him an extension. Period.
You're right. I mean, the bottom line is, but let's if Jim Riggleman and the Washington Nationals would have finished the season strong, and like I said, a game over or a couple games below 500. You don't think the Washington Nationals or any other team would have to give this guy at least a shot or at least think about him? A legitimate shot.
Shot. Right. No, I think we both agree. And not just that, I mean, he would have gotten other work around the league. He was certainly not, you know, excuse me, he was not going to just be sitting, you know, never land. At least now, I mean, certainly you have to wonder if you're looking to make Jim Riggleman your next potential manager. It certainly does not come from this meltdown. I call it a meltdown because to me that's what it looked like. It looked like a guy who was like, I mean, literally, he was having like a nervous breakdown.
Breakthrough. Hopefully. Hopefully it was a breakthrough for Jim Riggleman. But, I mean, I just thought to me it was just not a wise decision. Just not a wise decision for Jim Riggleman to just walk away like that. Just not a wise decision for Jim Riggleman to do that. It's not wise. It's just not wise. It's not smart, and hopefully it doesn't affect him going forward, but I can't see it not affecting him going forward. I really can't. I'm a little speechless by it, but I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. But again, there had to be more involved and more stuff involved, so you never know. You just never know, but for whatever reason, Jim Riggleman, no longer the manager of the Washington Nationals, and the new manager is Davey Johnson. So we'll see what happens with the Nationals going forward. But Jim Riggleman is out, and he quit. Some will say it was, you know, it's principled. You know, I mean, he had a good reason for quitting. And some will say, in a lot of ways, it was just not smart, and it's just stupid. And I fall with those who believe that it was stupid, just not smart. And we'll see what happens going forward. We'll definitely see what happens going forward. And I was reading something actually today, switching gears now. I was reading something today actually about Donovan McNabb. And, you know, we all know that I'm a big McNabb guy and a big McNabb supporter. If you forgot, let me remind you.
Save McNabb, everybody. Save McNabb, everybody. He is the guy. If the Eagles want to fly, everybody save McNabb.
So you all know I'm a big Donovan fan. You know, I supported him in the past, and I didn't want Donovan to leave. But Donovan, some interesting quotes about Twitter, and, you know, let me read it. He was on a radio station yesterday. Let me read it. First of all, I'm not a fan of tweeting. I'm not a fan of Twitter. Nothing against their program or what they have, but as an athlete, I think you need to get off of Twitter. All these social networks you're tweeting about, you're watching the game when you want to be playing in it, but you're mad you're not playing in it, so you're going to criticize someone who's playing in it. Donovan continues to say, I don't believe that that's the right deal. That's not professional by any means. And we're all in a fraternity. So if you see a guy who's struggling, this isn't the time to jump on him or kick him while he's down, because that same guy will come against you and kind of blast your team out of the water. He went on to say a few other things, but Donovan pretty much is coming out against Twitter and athletes tweeting. And there may be something to that. There may be something to that.
Well, I mean, Paul. We both know, and that's the biggest problem. You know, the biggest problem this country faces is not just Twitter. It's Facebook. It's instant everything, and we put Twitter and all of its all of the behavior from Twitter above everything. And, I mean, above education, you know, there's not. We don't. I certainly, you know me, Paul. I will fight this battle till the end of time, which is this country needs to wake up and realize that we're cutting education budgets, and they're not, you know, they're not taxing, if you will, any kind of tax these companies on the internet. Do something to save education. Instead, Twitter and this idiot Mark Zuckerberg, who does nothing and is worth $20 billion because of what? All Facebook does, all Twitter does, is continue to make, you know, this country dumber and lose its perspective and lose its focus. And instead of doing something, you're going to talk about it. You're going to, you know, every second of every day, at some point, get up, get off of your ass and go do something with your life instead of telling, instead of commenting or following. You just people are followers. They follow everyone. You can follow anyone. Instead of leading, instead of leading yourself or instead of being a leader, you are exactly what. And I think that's the biggest joke of Twitter, that you're a follower. I mean, and I feel bad for the fact that Donovan, people come out and say, oh, you know, he's still angry. And no, I think it's a very valid point that we don't need to. I can't say this enough. Nobody cares what everyone thinks. I don't care what anyone thinks. I certainly don't worry about it.
Well, you don't care, but there's a lot of people. I mean, I saw Kim Kardashian yesterday. She has 8 million followers. So people care about what she's doing, what she thinks, what she's wearing, how she's acting. and what's on her mind. People, you can't say people don't care when they actually do care. Now, whether they should care is another story, but they do care. People do care. You can't say people don't care, and that may go to your talking about the dumbing down of America, and yes, there's some thought to that and some truth to that. Americans are dumb. They're not as smart as they once were. They're not involved. They're not reading books. They're reading Twitter. They're not doing the necessary things to educate themselves, and they're just, I mean, you know, part of that also, I mean, this is a larger issue. Part of that is technology. I mean, you give people technology and all these different things to kind of consume their time. They're going to do that instead of doing the simple things and probably the things that you should do. And it goes back also to the notion of the microwave. And, you know, we put food in the microwave because it's fast, it's quick, and you can eat it and do what you got to do. But sometimes the food tastes better. I'd say more often than not, the food tastes better in the oven. You put it in the oven, it cooks through thoroughly and nicely and beautifully and lovely, and it browns a little bit, and it goes through a process. The microwave doesn't go through a process. It's just pretty quick and dirty. The oven goes through a nice little process. And the reality of life in today's society is we want it quick, we want it fast, and we want to do it without any situations or problems. We just want it fast and dirty. And so with that being said, the reality of it all is, yes, our society is dumbed down. Yes, Twitter contributes to that. Yes, Facebook contributes to all that. But make sure you follow me on Twitter. I go for it again. But anyway, all these things contribute to the dumbing down of America. And so with that being said, it's a sad situation. But Donovan's comments, there is some truth to what he's saying, because also you have Rashard Mendenhall and his situation where he was tweeting some things about 9/11, and it got him into a lot of trouble. And it also, he lost some sponsorships from it. You also had the Jay Cutler thing when everybody was coming at Jay Cutler when he took himself out of the game against the Chicago Bears. People were tweeting about that and being offensive, being very critical of the man, and really and truly not knowing the situation before criticizing him. And, you know, we got to, you know, sometimes, like you said, we are in a microwave generation. It's the microwave generation, and, you know, unfortunately, people want it quick, people want it fast, people want it dirty. They don't want to read books. They'd rather watch movies. And the movies and the books are usually better than the movies, but people want to watch the movies over the book because it's quick, it's dirty, it's entertaining. People want to be entertained, and unfortunately, people don't want to be educated. And with that being said, it becomes a problem with our society. And, you know, Twitter, Facebook, and all those different social networks, I mean, they are dumbing down our society and making us – people are not, you know, talking face-to-face anymore. People are Skyping, you know. People are doing all these different things. Technology, I tell you, technology is making people lazy. It's making people dumb. And we're going to, and if it keeps going, we're going to have a dumb, lazy society. Dumb, lazy, fat society, actually, when you think about it, because we like to eat, too. Americans are fat, too. Americans love to eat. Got McDonald's, where it's quick and dirty. Burger King, quick and dirty. Quick, 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 quick. That's all we want. We just want it quick. And that's a problem. That truly is a problem. And, you know, well, we'll see what happens with Twitter and Facebook, but it ain't going nowhere. It's going to be here for a while. It's not going anywhere, no time soon. No time soon.
No, I mean, we know. Exactly. The bottom line.
And Jeremy, maybe you need to get on Twitter. I mean, maybe you need to start tweeting.
Stop. I mean, we both. It's not even funny. I mean, I think it's great. It can almost draw the same parallel, if you will, to the Jim Riggleman mentality, meaning it's all about me. It's I deserve more money. I'm not going to play or I'm not going to manage. He sounds like, you know, he does. He sounds like the athletes that you hear who are under contract and sitting out because they want more money. So to that end, what you see is, and it's funny, because you have an industry that all it's doing is promoting you, and essentially you can be other people's ideas, you can be other people's thoughts, and I look at Twitter, I look at Facebook, everything has its place. Don't get me wrong. I think ultimately this world has definitively raised the bar of technology and how technology can perform and help industries perform, help people perform. But then when you look at the fact that, I mean, now, I mean, you have to be able to watch TV on your cell phone. When the advent of the cell phone was personal, it started as personal safety. Now it's moved into, I mean, your cell phone is more important. People's cell phones are more important than their families. I mean, there are people who will pay their cell phone bill before they're buying groceries. Companies that are doing extremely well, these prepaid or these no-contract cell phone companies, oftentimes are doing better, if you will, than grocery stores, where, you know, people are looking to, they have to have internet on a prepaid cell phone so they can look and feel. You have to have the same prepaid BlackBerry that you have to have, you know, for a guy who is running a multinational company. For what? So you can get an email from your friend? It's okay, it's America. It's what we came to this country supposedly to end tyranny but when are we going to look at it and say, hey, you know what? I mean, I have two young children. I don't need to spend $80 a month just for a cell phone so I can tweet when I have my MacBook and my iPhone and my iPad and my iBook and now I can cloud and soon, who knows? I mean, like you said, just you don't even have to go to work anymore to look around in this country. We are too proud to show people, you know, our PA State MasterCard, which is funded by me and Paul, and the hardworking people of the state, the few hardworking people of the state of Pennsylvania, who will go out to dinner on Pennsylvania's dime. And I think,
well, I mean,
Paul, you can pay a cell phone bill.
Well, that's you're going to a very large issue, a very large issue. But I mean, if you need an access card, you need it. I don't have no problem with you needing an access card. I mean, if you need it, you need it. That's fine. I mean, you pay your tax. You paid your taxes on some point. You've given something into the system.
Yeah.
If you need it,
you
need it.
That's why you and I, Paul, we'll. We always have agreed to disagree, and I mean, but I think the one thing that, and I say, I use Jim Ringelmann because I see it. I mean, people think too much of themselves too soon, and part of that is because, I mean, look at how many, maybe we have to see how many people follow Jim Ringelmann or how many friends does Jim Ringelmann have on Facebook. I mean, maybe his friends on Facebook said, hey, Jim, I mean, you won 11 in a row. You need a contract extension, and sure enough, destroy this man because, I mean, they're not the ones getting the guaranteed contract he had at least through the end of the year. I mean, these Facebook friends that you have, it's comical. You don't even see these people, and then they're your friends. I mean, you went to high school with them, and you're 50. I mean, who cares? But remind people how they can follow you again on Twitter, please.
Go for again. Make sure you follow me on Twitter @GoForAgain. If you want to continue to be dumb, stupid, just follow me
let's keep it real, Paul. You go for it, or Paul Gand is the fan page and what for Facebook. Let's get all the credentials out there, not just at GoForAgain. Get it all out there for everyone. Lay it all out.
Well, we'll do that at some point, but we're going to bring in shortly. Fiona McCueg, one of the stars of Animal Planet's Well Wars, and we had actually Matt Smith from Well Wars last week, and we're going to bring Fiona in next, and she's going to talk about the show Well Wars, and a lot of people like the show. It's a popular show, and I've watched it a few times, and it's a lot of action. So if you like action, you'll like Well Wars, Animal Planet, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific time on Friday. So make sure you check it out. But we're going to bring in Fiona very shortly. We're now being joined by one of the stars of Well Wars, which airs on Animal Planet, Miss Fiona McCuig. Fiona, how are you?
Good morning. Well, thank you.
I'm doing well, doing well. And now, Fiona, you worked in real estate for many years, and I got to know, how'd you go from real estate to stopping the killing of whales?
Well, I did commercial property, so CBD, big buildings in the city, for about 8 years. But I was always a bit frustrated because I knew there was so much happening out in the ocean that was so destructive, including the Japanese whalers coming down to the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, killing whales illegally. So I just had to kind of quit my job and get out on the ships.
And where did this love of animals come from? Because you're risking your life out here. It's dangerous out there. Where does that love of animals come from?
I've got to say, that is probably one of the best questions I've ever been asked, and I've been trying to work this out for quite a few years. And I did sort of work it out because I went home after being away for so long, and my mother has got all these prints of animals all over the house. So I'm thinking, right, okay, well, that's, I've just been growing up with animals all around me, all these sketches everywhere. So I think it comes from there originally, yep.
And you're working under Captain Paul Watson and looking at Paul Watson. This guy seems like a pretty intense guy. How is it working under him?
He is such a lovely, kind guy. But when people are destroying the oceans illegally, he's the first to get in there and make justice. So he's an awesome guy. He's very funny, actually. But he's very wise. He's been out in the sea for a long, long time. He started Sea Shepherd in 1977, and since he was a teenager, he was throwing himself in front of ships that were going out to kill the harp seals and the Canadian ice. So he is 100% born and bred, meant to save wildlife in the oceans.
And now whales, they bring a lot of money to the Japanese. So anytime you're messing with another person's money, there's going to be dangers. Talk about the dangers that you guys face out there.
One of the biggest dangers is, yes, it's the Japanese whalers because they ram us, and last year they rammed and sunk one of our small black carbon fiber ships, and we thought those guys were definitely badly injured or dead. And I was rescue swimmer, so I got told to put on my immersion survival suit and go out and possibly drag out dead bodies. So it does get very, very scary down there. But also, it is also the most treacherous oceans in the world. So when we leave Australia and we go down to Antarctica, we go through incredibly huge storms and waves, and that is dangerous. And the main other danger is the fact that we're going down there in the pack ice, and so if we ram hard into one of these small bergy bits, we call them, it has the potential to rip open the hull and potentially sink the ship. So it is very hostile down there, and sometimes we're 3 weeks away from help. So if you're sinking, it's very, very dangerous.
Definitely. Has anybody in your family tried to talk you out of this?
Definitely. I've had, two uncles, one on either side at lunch, wanting me to sit at the end of the table so they could give me a lecture that I'd been to Antarctica once to save the whales. I've been there, done that. There's no need for me to go down again. But I did go down again, and this was our most successful season, which has been portrayed on Animal Planet so well, because Sea Shepherd's gone down 7 years in a row, and this year we actually chased the Japanese whalers out early out of the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. So I'm so glad I went down for another year.
We're talking to Fiona McCuig, one of the stars of Well Wars, which airs on Animal Planet each Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And on the ship, the Bob Barker, Fiona, you're a deckhand, you're a cook, and you're a rescue swimmer. Talk about your responsibilities on the Bob Barker.
Being a deckhand is lots of washing up, because you're cooking for sometimes, washing up for 36 people. you're making lots of defensive lines, you're using all these power tools, which were very new for me, using all these hammer guns and grinders and things like that. Rescue swimmer, I'm an ocean swimmer, so that's natural for me to jump in the water, and I just absolutely love it. Although, you know, didn't think I'd get myself in such a scary situation as pulling out dead bodies, I've got to admit. And then last year I was actually a quartermaster, so I was really lucky to be with the Captain Cornelison on the Bob Barker, and I was able to learn how to drive the ship through the ice floes, which is harder than I expected, actually, because when you actually move the helm, it takes up to, 15 seconds to move the ship, so you can really oversteer it. So that was so lucky to have that experience.
And on the Bob Barker, you are a cook. Tell us a special meal that you cook up.
I wasn't really wanting to be a cook, but I did a few meals for the ship, and they were like, oh, she can cook. That will take off a bit of strain off the people who were designed to cook. So, well, my favorite thing is pumpkin soup, actually, because everyone on the ship has to eat vegan food. That's very strict. I actually didn't really even understand what vegan food was about 2 years ago, so that was quite a new concept for me. But now I'm pretty much vegan, vegetarian after such a great experience and the yummy food you can cook. But it's got a pumpkin soup, and, I mean, I could talk through the recipe, but it might be a bit boring. But I think the trick is it's got coconut milk in there, so it makes it really delicious. And roast the pumpkins and garlic and, yeah, whiz it up. And, yeah, quite simple.
It sounds very interesting. I love meat. That's tough to give up. Was it tough for you?
I've got to say, it wasn't as tough as some people found it. Like, some people thought, oh, my gosh, you know, how am I really going to handle this? Because a lot of people, you know, are brought up with, you know, meat and potatoes, especially in Australia. So I've got to say, I think it's harder for guys because they really do associate delicious meat on the barbecue or, you know, a bit more than I did, I suppose. So, I mean, I was up for a new experience. So, no, it wasn't too hard for me, actually. But I've got to say, I did miss cheese. I got off the ship and I ate some cheese to the horror of my crewmates.
Well,
but
I'm telling. Well, I guess you told on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you're the founder of Excellent and World Zoos. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, that was an organization that I set up because I happened to travel in Russia with my family, and I went to the St. Petersburg Zoo, and I just, you know, the tour guide was saying, oh, no, you know, please don't go there, that's not, you know, but I want to go and see it. It was the most horrific thing I've ever seen. If I was a vet, you know, which I always wanted to be, you know, I would have happily put those animals down, because if I was one of those animals, I would want to be put down. It was just the most horrendous cruelty. And so I decided to set up this organization to instigate change in third world zoos. So I went to China, and I worked in the Beijing Zoo, and we organized the reconstruction of the Australia area of the zoo. And I went over there a couple of times, and you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you need quite a bit of money to go over there and fund it. So, you know, I'm doing Sea Shepherd at the moment, but I'll definitely be getting stuck into another project at some point. But zoos are a funny thing because animal lovers don't want to go near zoos because they think it's so cruel, which it is. And then people who don't like animals, you know, don't sort of, you know, think about zoos and want to improve them too. So it's tricky. You know, there's a lot of animals out there that are sort of in, you know, jail-like conditions where, you know, we should really be free.
And Fiona, you've been on the show for the past 2 years. What's the craziest thing you've seen during your time on this show, Whale Wars?
The most craziest is when the small carbon fiber ship got rammed by the Shonan Maru number 2, which is the security ship down there of the whaling fleet. And we did happen to see this little black boat go completely under the harpoon ship. That was very scary. And as I said before, I was told, you know, I'd have to, you know, jump in and, you know, potentially drag out dead bodies. That was so scary. This year was scary because the small boats went out and they were meant to leave the Bob Barker ship for about 4 hours, but all these different sort of scenarios sort of happened and they ended up having problems with their small boat, started to break down, and they were away from the ship for over 12 hours. That was very scary because those guys were very close to actually a couple of them did have hypothermia, so they came back very shaken up. I mean, but everyone goes down there is so passionate about saving the environment and saving the oceans that we do put our life on the line because it's worth the risk for us. Like, no one wants to die down there, but the oceans are in such a bad state right now. And if we can't even stop whales being killed in a whale sanctuary, I mean, what hope do we have in saving all the smaller fish in the sea?
And that's a very great point. And we're talking to Fiona McCuig, one of the stars of Whale Wars, which airs on Animal Planet, each Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. And I'll leave you with this, Fiona. I heard your captain, Paul Watson, say that, I mean, you guys have pretty much done a great job with this thing. You've done such a great job that there may not be another season. How real is that?
I'm really hoping that is the realism, although 2 weeks ago the Japanese whaling fleet left to go and kill whales in the Pacific. So that is news that makes me think, oh, my gosh, I really hope they don't go down to the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary again. We've been down there 7 years and effectively cutting their quotas down to, we saved over 800 whales this year. Last year we saved 500, the year before 500. So we're speaking their language, and that's cutting them where it hurts the most, and that's economically because they're not listening to all the laws and treaties. So I really hope they don't come down, but it worries me the fact that after all that's gone on in Japan, they're still going to go and kill whales in the Pacific, which is whales are they're an endangered species, and they're loved by the world more than any other wild animal, and the world does not want whaling to happen. And the fact that Japan is sort of saying, well, bugger you, we're going to do it is an insult to everyone, because everyone owns those whales. It's not just a country that has 1.6% of the population. So, look, I mean, this year was great because we chased them out early. So let's hope that was the end of it, and we said farewell to that big ugly whaling factory ship once and for all.
Fiona, we thank you for taking time out to talk to us. It was nothing but the pleasure. We wish you and the rest of the guys nothing but the best of luck. This is a lot of danger out there, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thanks so much. Great to talk to you.
Take care. Fiona McCuig, one of the stars of Whale Wars, and it's a great show. It's a very great show, and again, that show airs each and every Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific on Animal Planet. Check it out. Good show, and a lot of action, a lot of fun things going on there on Whale Wars. And it's almost about that time. It's around that time. Somebody did something that wasn't too bright, wasn't too smart, and quite frankly, was very, very dumb and stupid. And my choice this week for you stupid this week is the Washington Nationals and Jim Riggleman. Yes, the Washington Nationals and Jim Riggleman. And I say that for this reason. If you're the Washington Nationals, you're a franchise that's been a bad franchise for a very long time. You have not been good. You've been actually pretty bad. And at this point, you are a game over 500. The first time that you've been over 500 this late in the season in 6 years. You mean to tell me that Mike Rizzo, general manager of the Washington Nationals, Jim Riggleman, manager of the Washington Nationals, you mean to tell me that you guys could not come together and work this thing out? You mean to tell me you guys could not sit down and work this thing out? I mean, come on. Now, maybe it goes to a larger issue that, the Nationals didn't really want Jim Riggleman after this year. Maybe that was the case. Or maybe Jim Riggleman overreacted. I don't know. People say different things, and people believe different things, and people feel different ways. But at the end of the day, you mean to tell me you have won 11 out of the last 12 games. You are one game over 500. The best record you've had since, the best record you've had at this point since 2005. You mean to tell me you couldn't overcome this? You mean to tell me you guys couldn't figure this thing out? What happened in Washington this week by Jim Riggleman was dumb, stupid, sophomoric, childish, asinine. What happened with Mike Rizzo and the Washington Nationals was dumb, stupid, asinine, ridiculous, and childish as well. You guys need to come to, you guys should have came together and sorted this thing out. I mean, it's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it, no getting around it. So for that, the Washington Nationals, a bad franchise, has been a bad franchise for a long time, and Jim Riggleman, you guys are not only dumb, you guys are not only asinine, you guys are not only childish, but you guys, you're stupid. Jim Riggleman, Washington Nationals, you are stupid. Jeremy, who you got?
Well, switching back to basketball, I'm going to go with a tag team as well, and that's Dan Gilbert and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Dan Gilbert, because he ran his mouth all off season, and then when LeBron James loses, he runs his mouth even more to walk into probably in the last 10 years one of the most talentless drafts that we've seen with, unfortunately, two great picks, and in my opinion, will come away with this within 3 years, right back where he was today, sitting at the number one pick in the draft 3 years from now. And I think it's a shame for Cleveland to have to be associated with this owner who will, I guess, hold this grudge forever, against LeBron James, instead of keeping his mouth quiet and maybe playing the victim and getting some sympathy, he chooses to and will continue to blast the player who, before his career ends, will win a championship, but it certainly won't be in Cleveland, and it will certainly be before Cleveland wins one.
Not so fast there.
I think if you're Dan Gilbert, you got to realize you're stupid to fight a losing battle, which is LeBron didn't want you, so try to move on with your life and try to do it in a way when you have a 1 and a 4 where you're at least going to make it, matter 3 years later. So I put that as, if I'm Dan Gilbert, if I'm Cleveland Cavaliers, you stupid.
There you have it. The Cleveland Cavaliers and Dan Gilbert, along with Jim Riggleman and the Washington Nationals. All you guys are stupid. You're stupid. You're just stupid. You're not smart. You're just stupid. There you have it. I mean, as you said, Cleveland, I mean, the Heat may win one before Cleveland. Not so fast, pal.
Oh, stop.
Not so fast, pal. Not so fast. LeBron has not won it yet. Not won it yet. And he's talking about not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, blah, 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 blah. He kept going on and on and on. Not so fast, my friend. Not so fast, my friend. And, with that being said, I mean, Cleveland may not be winning it anytime soon either, but Miami may not win it either as well. So we'll see what happens. But at this point, LeBron James, 0. The Cleveland Cavaliers, 0. So right now, everybody is zeros, all zeroed up at this point. So, I mean, we'll see what happens going forward. But I just think right now, LeBron James, 0. Cleveland, 0. And we'll see how it plays out going forward. We want to thank Dahani Jones for stopping by. Make sure you pick up his book, The Sportsman, It's in all bookstores around the country. It's a great book. Pick it up. Support the cause. Also, we want to thank Brian Kahn for stopping by. Make sure you check him out. He writes for Slam Magazine and SportsBackpack.com. Also, we want to thank Fiona McCuig, one of the stars of Well Wars. Make sure you check out Well Wars each and every Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. And make sure you check out this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other shows. And make sure you follow the show on Twitter and dumb yourself down and be stupid and not be smart and don't read books but read tweets at Go For It Gant. That's Go For It Gant, and that's at twitter.com. So make sure you check it out. Follow me, follow me, follow me, follow me. Follow me. Please follow me. And I want to thank everybody for listening. I mean, it was a great show, a lot of fun. And make sure you listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGant. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. I hope you have a nice day. See you later. Bye.